Committee on Elections will come to order. It's Wednesday, March 19th. Senator Nienau, welcome to the subcommittee. You have Senate File 2357 before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Before we start, there is an A1 amendment. If no one else is interested, I did talk to Senator Kiffmeyer beforehand. She's willing to offer that amendment.
We don't have it. It's coming, but do you want to begin to describe it, and then we'll adopt it? It's the first committee that you've had this.
Yes. The A1 amendment simply pushes the effective date out to 2015. The Secretary of State had some concerns with having an earlier implementation date because of having to they would be required to reprint certificate of I forget what form it was. I've got a letter from them. They would have to reprint a bunch of forms, and they wanted it pushed out at least until 2015.
So Senator Kiffmeyer moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape Senator Nienau would like. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Senator Nienau, to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, thank you for adopting that amendment. With that amendment, the language in this bill before you today lines up with the language in the other house, that in the other body, that the bill is sitting on the general register, and this would line the language up identically if this were to get passed and sent over there. This came as a result of a concern of a constituent of mine. It was actually a Chisago County Commissioner, Mike Robinson. And what has happened to him in the most recent couple of elections is there's a gentleman who lives in Wisconsin who has filed the last couple of elections to run against this incumbent county commissioner in the primary. Now, for whatever reason, this person in Wisconsin has a grudge with Commissioner Robinson and is just trying to create trouble for him and see if he can get lucky and knock him out of office. If this gentleman from Wisconsin were to be elected, he could never serve. So some work was done over the summer to try to find a way to create some residency requirements or at least create a threshold to make it harder for this kind of nuisance filing. And what we have come down to is requiring, you'll see on page one, starting line 21, that we will require a residency affidavit, essentially, in place of a filing fee. And on page two, starting at line seven, if a candidate does not or has not resided in the district for at least 1 year prior and did not reside for the 6 months prior to the election or 1 month prior to the filing period. In that circumstance, in other words, if you've got someone that hasn't been living there, they can't simply pay the $50 or $25 or whatever the filing fee is with the county. They actually have to get a petition with signatures. So if someone has been living there or will be living there for the 6 months prior to the election, they can certify that. But if that's not the case, then they would have to go through the effort of getting a couple of hundred signatures. I have to take a look and see what's currently in law in order to get on the ballot.
Senator Nienau, and you and I talked about this briefly this morning, but the tell me how this would work then with the existing state statute that's you can see in 1.19 and 1.20 that right now you have to be a resident of the district from which you are seeking office for 30 days.
Yes.
So how do those two,
Madam Chair, that
not conflict?
By filing for the primary, if someone were to win the primary, it is theoretically possible then to come in compliance with the law, so they are not invalidated from filing for the primary because there's a 30-day requirement prior to is it the election or taking office? I forget. This pushes that out further so that's essentially a loophole. I can file for the primary and say, oh, sure, I'm going to move in. I'll be living there and meet that 30-day requirement, never intending to win the primary in the first place. And if you did win the primary, you could simply just say, well, I guess I'm going to withdraw from the race now, because the goal of this person was to be a nuisance for the incumbent and see if they could bump them out in the primary so they can't get elected.
So, Senator Nienau, I'm not proposing that we do this, but another solution to the case you're mentioning is that you could change the existing statute to say that you have to be a resident of the district for 30 days before the primary election. That be another way to go about it. But Ms. Frazier, do you have something to add to this?
Madam Chair and members, Beth Frazier, the Deputy Secretary of State. The 30-day requirement is actually a constitutional requirement for serving in office. So I don't think you can just change the statute.
Thank you. Clarifying that. And Ms. Frazier, do you have any comments on the petition process that Senator Nenow is proposing, or any impact it would have on the Secretary of State's office or issues that you would see?
Madam Chair and members, no, we're fine with this language. We worked with Representative Johnson in the House on drafting it, and with the delayed effective date, we think it works fine.
Thank you. Senator Nenow, do you have any testifiers or anybody?
No, Madam Chair. Commissioner Robinson would have come in and tell you his personal story if he could, but he was not available today.
Any discussion from the committee? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The big thing, big concern for me is that we would keep somebody from the ballot who wants to, you know, to exercise their right. This bill does not keep anybody from doing it, but I think it is also consistent with other laws that we have passed in regards to eligibility and other things like that. But the biggest thing is whether it's this particular candidate or another district or anything else like that, does this keep anybody from the ballot? And I don't see that it does keep anybody. I think in this particular kind of circumstances, doing a petition, if they indeed are in this situation, they should readily be able to get those signatures to qualify. And so it doesn't keep them from the ballot. And that's the important consideration, I think, for us.
And Madam Chair, and that was in some earlier versions of the bill, we had language that had some of those concerns that were tied into the language. And this is what was come up with, is kind of a balance of we could not completely eliminate somebody from getting on the ballot, but we could at least create a little bit of a bar to get over if someone wants to file these kinds of nuisance primary filings. At least they're going to have to work at it.
And perhaps Ms. Frazier can answer this, but could you remind the committee, Ms. Frazier, if a, for instance, in the situation that Senator Nenow talked about, if the person who really lives in Wisconsin would win the primary and doesn't move to the district 30 days, does not live in the district 30 days before the general election, what's the process for contesting that?
Madam Chair and members, there would be a few options. Within 30 days of the election, I think that somebody could bring a lawsuit under the errors and omissions statute saying that the candidate should not be listed on the ballot because they actually don't meet the qualifications. Alternatively, if that person won, there would be the opportunity to file a suit under that same statute saying that the person was not qualified to receive the election certificate, and so a suit to bar the person from receiving the certificate if they won.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, Madam Chair. I think the bigger consideration here is that is a huge burden to do that. And I think the duty we have as a legislature is to, first of all, put laws in place that keep their freedom to be on the ballot, but in this situation, we're also able to keep the voters, protect them from candidates who may have, if they're truly not a resident. I think having some ability like this does serve the voters well.
Madam Chair and members, that's why we like this bill.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on Senate File 2357? Seeing no further discussion, Senator Kiffmeyer moves that Senate File 2357 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Nenow.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for your time.
Mr. Chair, if
Senator
we could
Sieben.
Please do Senate File 2390 first.
Sure. And Senator Sieben, I see that there's an amendment to that as well.
There is. If we could, if I could please move the A3 amendment, it would get the bill in the shape I would like.
Okay, Senator Sieben moves the A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape and form that she would like. This is the first stop. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Sieben to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I think, can you roll over the bill? I'm going to just ask Ms. Frazier from the Secretary of State's office, since it is their bill, to explain it and explain the rationale behind the changes as the bill is presented, if that's okay.
Sure. Welcome, Ms. Frazier, and if you could state your name for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Beth Frazier, Deputy Secretary of State. So this is the Elections Administration bill for this session, and the proposal was brought up in conversation with counties and city and township election officials. And so the first section clarifies that employees of residential facilities who vouch for people who live in the facility do not need to be actually eligible to vote in Minnesota. Section 2 reduces paperwork by providing the Secretary of State with the authority to suppress or unsuppress the records of Safe at Home participants instead of having to get signed authorization from each county auditor to delegate that authority to our office. Section 3 is a technical correction to account for legislative changes last year to make all absentee ballot periods uniformly 46 days long, with the exception of township elections. Section 4 requires county auditors to send ballots to military and overseas voters by express mail if they miss the deadline for setting out ballots. Having this provision in state law could be helpful with the federal Department of Justice. Section 5 provides a start date for write-in candidates to register to have their ballots counted to coincide with the beginning of the filing period. Section 6 adds step parents to the list of relatives prohibited from serving as an election judge in the same precinct. Sections 7 and 8 are technical corrections to account for legislative changes last year to allow mail ballots to be processed on the same timeline as absentee ballots. Section 9 is a clarification of the Voters Bill of Rights to make it reflect the time off allowance in other law, which only applies to state and federal elections. Sections 10, 11, 12, and 13 are technical corrections removing references to colored ballots. Section 14 mirrors language found in Chapter 412 for statutory cities, clarifying that for charter cities, officers continue in office until their successor is elected. Section 15 standardizes the affidavit of candidacy for city offices. Section 16 prohibits a school district from holding a special election on the date of the March township election if the school district includes a township with an election on that date. It also shortens the window around the March township election day during which school districts are prohibited from having special elections. This provision in particular is the highest elections priority for the Township Association and is also a high priority for the School Districts Association. Section 17 provides in statute the form of the question to be used in the case of a recall. You'll remember in last year's technical bill, we changed the form of many other questions so that they were yes or no questions. Section 18 also standardizes the ballot question. The author's amendment makes a technical correction to clarify that under federal law, we never remove a voter's record from the system but can inactivate it. It allows for the names of individuals who have submitted an absentee ballot that's been accepted to have their name released, but not until it's been accepted. and it standardizes ballot questions in three other cases. And I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Frazier. Any questions? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On Section 2, in regards to changing, this is not so much technical at all. This is much more of a policy situation. Could you explain a little bit more?
Ms. Frazier.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, this relates to the Safe at Home Address Confidentiality Program that the Office of the Secretary of State runs. And participants in Safe at Home are prohibited from having records, active records, in the statewide voter registration system. And so the process is that when we receive an application from a person in the program, the Secretary of State's office needs to go into the statewide voter registration system and suppress the record so that it cannot be seen. We cannot make changes to voter records unless the county has delegated that authority to our office. So we have received delegations of authority from all 87 county auditors, but as the auditors change, we need to wrangle them and get a new delegation of authority. And so this would eliminate the need for that paperwork and for us making sure we constantly have an updated delegation from each of the auditors. And the counties are fine with giving us this limited authority.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, yes. And then on Section 1, you made a statement and kind of went by quickly as we moved through the explanation. Could you review that again?
Yes, Madam. Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer. So Section 1 deals with vouching, and the current law talks about having a voter who is registered to vote in the precinct or who is an employee employed by a residential facility. And so the current language implies that an employee employed by a residential facility has to be an eligible voter in Minnesota, which would preclude, for example, in a border town like Moorhead, if the individual who came with the residents of the battered women's facility, if the person who came with them to vouch for them, who is an employee at the facility, but is a resident of North Dakota, this language would imply that they were not allowed to vouch for that person. And so this is a clarification that the qualification for a residential facility employee to vouch is that they are an employee, not whether or not they're eligible to vote in Minnesota. It does not make any changes to other vouching, where people have to be registered voters in that precinct who cannot have been vouched for that day.
And Mr. Chair, I would think that this made sense to me when we think about nursing homes that are located on border communities as well. I know that in Hastings, for example, they have employees who live in Hudson. And again, the individual who works in the residential home is able now, under this language, to be able to vouch for that the residents of that facility are residents of that facility, and they are who they say they are.
Okay. Any further questions?
Yes,
Senator
I do.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Section 5. This isn't so much that I have any disagreement with this 84 days before the primary, but there must be a story here that might be prove interesting.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer. There is a candidate who wants to run for president in 2016 who has already tried to notify us that they want their ballots counted. And that seems a little premature. We think it would be more prudent to allow candidates who want to run to file that paperwork closer to the actual election in which they want their votes counted. Just like other candidates don't file, people aren't filing for president at this point. We're asking that folks who want write-in votes counted wait until at least the filing period.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. I see none. Any closing statements, Senator Sieben?
No, Mr.
Or
Chair.
Ms. Frazier?
maybe just ask if anybody else wants to speak on the bill.
Sure. Anybody else? Would anybody else like to testify? Okay, seeing none, then Senator Sieben renews her motion that Senate file 2390 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the full Committee on Rules and Administration. So, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. So.
One by night, no vote there.
Ladies and gentlemen.
So instinctive.
The chair should tell him that he has to be in his seat before he can.
That's right. Senator Newman informed me that you have to be in your seat in order to vote.
No, Newman doesn't know everything.
They count us as present for a quorum. If we're sitting in the back row, I think we can count you.
Senator Limmer, I'll make an appointment to win you over your vote on that, that
okay.
bill.
So, and next bill on the agenda, we have Senate File 2302, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. The A3, I believe, is being distributed. It's an amendment that would get the bill in the shape I would like. And there was a technical change that we thought it'd just be easier to have it redrafted.
Everybody have the amendment? Again, this is the A3 amendment. So this is to get the bill in the shape and form that the author would like. And again, this is the first stop. So all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Sieben to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Members, Senate File 2302 requires that in the 7-county metro area, only in the 7-county metro area, that soil and water conservation district supervisors be elected by districts as opposed to by the whole county as it is currently. Some counties already in the 7-county already do can elect by districts, but they're not required to. So the bill that's before you would do just that, necessitate or require that soil and water conservation district supervisors be elected by districts. This bill, to be real honest, came to me from a House member who feels real strongly. He in the past was a soil and water conservation officer and felt real strongly that in the metropolitan area, to have more accurate representation, it's beneficial to have supervisor districts. Now, I think it's most helpful if you think about some of the counties in the 7-county metro area. And we have a testifier here from Dakota County. Dakota County, on its northern edge, is suburban, densely populated. In the southern part of Dakota County, it's sparsely populated. And so I think the intent behind the legislation is to have those soil and water district supervisors more accurately reflect the districts that would be created by this. Now, you'll notice that the language doesn't specify how the districts are drawn. Some counties, it's my understanding, use them in the same way as their county commissioner board districts. This doesn't specify that. The amendment specified that the Soil and Water Board shall adopt a resolution to provide for staggered terms and then sets the effective date for 2015, January 1st to 2015. So with me today to testify is John Zammiller, and he can speak more to why he's supporting it.
Welcome, and Mr. Zammiller, if
yes.
You could state your name for the record.
My name is John Zammiller. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, as well as the senators here hearing this bill. As Senator Sieben stated, Dakota County is a diverse county. represented by five different individuals on the Soil and Water Conservation District. The range in population for each one of those districts varies dramatically. In District 5, which is comprised of the three southernmost townships in southeasternly townships in Dakota County, there are only 3,600 people, roughly. However, in the district that I reside in, District 1, there's 211,000 people. If you look at the districts, the average, if you were to equally proportion the population for each one of the districts, it would be 86,137 people. That tells me that it is 2.5 times of what an average population would be for five districts. Now, Dakota County does have different needs, and the Soil and Water Districts work to encourage voluntary participation in conservation projects, and it's noble work, and it often goes unnoticed. I can't tell you how many times somebody has called me up and said, what do I do when I get to the back page of the ballot on these races? Because you're voting for all of these people that are vying for these commissioner seats or supervisor seats. Many of them have never set foot in communities like Ravenna Township or Douglas Township or the village of New Trier. How do you know, how does a voter make that informed choice? We're talking about what might as well be a different county entirely in some cases. It's my belief that if we can at least move this to a population-based district or an electing by districts, that we can do both. We can ensure that there's adequate representation on the county's Soil and Water Conservation District, but also respect the voice of the people. It's been a fundamental premise of our democracy, one person, one vote. I believe that having the disparity in the population in East District is contrary to those principles. And I would encourage the committee to look deeply into this and vote in the affirmative to adopt this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Zanmiller. Any questions? Okay, any other testifiers? Yes.
Mr. Chair, there is, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, someone who wants to speak in opposition to the bill.
Okay, welcome to the committee, and if you could state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Sheila Vanney. I'm the Assistant Director with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Our association represents the soil and water districts across the state. They are political subdivisions of the state and special purpose units of local government. Our association supports the current statutory language that does provide for local SWCD determinations of their supervisor nominating districts for election of SWCD supervisors. We do oppose this particular legislation to make it mandatory for any SWCD to change their election process from countywide to election by nomination district. Actually, this option in current statute was initiated by our association back in 2003 as part of what we called our New Century Initiative, which updated several aspects of 103C, the SWCD statute, to provide some options to SWCDs across the state. It was not intended at that time to become mandatory for any SWCDs. The way that currently SWCDs, except for Washington Conservation District, are elected is countywide, so that, as what has been noted, every voter in an individual county has a voice in who represents them on the SWCD board. And those nomination districts are generally drawn to be geographically distributed across the county, recognizing that SWCD board members are taking action on land and water resource issues that take place geographically distributed across the county, so that the needs of the water resources and the land resources aren't necessarily on the same delineations as where the population is centered. And so some of those concerns are just historically why SWCD nomination districts have been drawn the way that they have and why it has been a countywide election. If changes are sought to the statute out of concerns of multiple candidates vying for an individual SWCD supervisor position, we would advocate moving toward a primary approach in those instances where there are more than two candidates seeking an individual office. But at this time, we do support the current statutory language as it is.
Chair. Thank you. And any questions at all? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Ms. Vanyam. And any further, anyone else that would like to testify? Okay, seeing no one, Senator Sieben would renew her motion that Senate File 2302, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the full Committee on Rules and Administration. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and the bill is passed. So thank you, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think that concludes the business before the committee, with the exception that they just handed out the minutes from the last meeting, and since we don't have another, if you could.
Monday, too?
Yes, and Monday. We didn't pass the minutes at the last meeting, so if you could please move the minutes from the last two meetings.
Sure, we will move the minutes from, the dates. Be Wednesday, March 12th at noon. Does everybody have those minutes? And the minutes from March 17th, also at noon. And Senator Newman.